Yesterday, we spoke to Claudia, and I want to call it the land of the stranded.
Right.
They're road washed out, and now these people are just haven't had contact with civilization, really, since Sunday. She's on the phone now to give us an update. Hi, Claudia.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to hear about the event on Quarry Walk tonight.
Yes, it's going to be great.
I'm going to have to tell my EMT and volunteer firemen friends about it.
Oh yeah,
Bob and Laura Platt. They've been out rescuing people and helping.
Well, they're exactly who we want to thank tonight.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, if they can get through, I'm sure they're going to be there.
We should get a big drone to come by and pick you people up.
Right.
Well, actually, I have some very good news about that.
Oh.
My husband was able to, the water has receded enough. I can't do it yet, I used to be able to, but he was able to get through the stream. He waded through last night to the other side.
Wow.
Where all the big earth-moving equipment is ready to go into action this morning.
Nice.
I saw it was there yesterday. What was the delay?
The delay was that this is a DEEP and DOT emergency. As I'm sure most of your listeners know, DEEP is Energy and Environmental Protection. So they're going to have to put pieces of earth-moving equipment into the water, and that can be a danger to the ecosystem. So they had to get permission.
I'm just chuckling at, you know.
God forbid the frog can't get through.
What we do.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Well, you can see all of these pieces of equipment are powered and fueled, and you're putting them into a riverbed, and they might be leaking fuel, so it could contaminate the ecosystem.
Right.
And also the asphalt is petroleum-based.
Right.
On Sunday, we saw huge chunks of asphalt rising up like ice flows out of the whitewater.
Yeah.
And pieces of those pavement are breaking off and flowing down the river. You know what it looked like? It looked like up in Kent, Connecticut, when the ice breaks up at the end of winter.
Yeah.
It was black, huge chunks of asphalt. So now that I've given those details, I'll answer your question. We had to get permission from Governor Lamont and I guess from the central DEEP department. And that actually took a couple of hours.
Ah, okay. All right. But they're ready to begin today.
We are told, yes, I think the permission came in about 2:30 in the afternoon. We were all bugging them and calling them up and saying, so have you got the paperwork through to the governor yet?
Yep.
And they'd say, soon, it's going through channels. So it went through channels, and it was received by 2:30.
That's how you do it. Squeaky wheel gets grease.
That's right.
Yep.
Good.
Well, you kind of have to bug people.
Yes, you do.
Greasy wheel.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of people in Hartford are at the Democratic National Convention, so not the easiest place to connect with someone to get a signature from, but I'm glad it got done.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that, we're going to start rebuilding your road today.
Well, I'm also very, very happy to hear about the efforts you're making to provide financial help for all of this.
You know, it's not going to make anyone whole, and it's not going to be what is needed, but it's going to be help.
Exactly. In the right direction.
I understand that the president has declared us an emergency area, so we might be eligible for FEMA help.
That would be great, because most of the people affected didn't have flood insurance.
No. Why would you?
No. So, all right, Claudia, I'm glad to hear that your husband made it across safely.
And came back.
And made it back.
Yeah, that's the big part.
That's the thing. I would have went back. I would have just kept there.
I'm going to a bar.
A little bit uneasy about that.
Yeah.
I couldn't look. He's going, don't look. You're making me nervous. And I'm standing by with the phone just in case. The big deal for us is going to be getting the bridge repaired and fixed, and that's going to run into thousands and thousands of dollars that is not covered by all of our homeowners insurance policies.
You have to build the bridge, or does the town?
Yeah, our bridge is actually a private bridge.
Okay.
I misspoke yesterday about how much it weighs. It weighs 35 tons.
Oof.
And a ton is 2,000 pounds. So weight-wise, our bridge is the equivalent of having a herd of 35 male bison.
Gotcha.
Down at the bottom of the driveway.
Yeah.
So
that's a visual.
Exactly what I'm thinking.
I'm picturing them.
Wow.
Wow. All right, Claudia, we're going to keep tabs on you. Thanks for checking in.
Good. Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Now.
Claudia in Southbury.
She rules.
Yeah.
Something else. She told this story that you have to really hear on the podcast of a baby being saved, a baby and a mother. And there's so many stories. You know, we unfortunately lost two people. That number could have been a lot higher if not for the bravery of a lot of first responders and citizens.
Yes.
Who just put themselves in danger to save people they never met.
Yep.
Your storm story or someone that you know lost everything. If you want to share that. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Yesterday, we got a call from someone in Naugatuck who said, hey, you know, there's a lot of stories out here. There's a story of a guy with a bar and a barbershop. He lost both of them.
Yeah.
Over by Nardelli's. And, you know, these stories need to be told. We said, well, we'll set aside some time.
Exactly.
For those calls to come in.
Yes.
203-882-9757. We have a relief site you could go to and donate money or request money. It's on the radio station website. It's on all of our social media Facebook pages and Channel 3 and us and Team Incorporated combined forces to do this. 100% of the donations will go to the people most affected, you know, the towns most affected.
Yes.
And folks who don't have insurance. So WPR.com, 95.9thefox.com, or the radio station Facebook page, or
yep,
the Chaz and AJ Facebook page. Those links are up. Tori in Naugatuck.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Yeah, how
good.
Are you?
How are you?
Yeah.
You know, taking it day by day, moment
yeah,
by moment at the time being, but safe, and that's what matters most.
Right.
But I was one of the houses on Cherry Street in Naugatuck.
Oh.
Yeah. So that whole neighborhood was definitely rocked to the core during this situation.
Your house has been condemned?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's deemed unlivable,
right,
so we are not allowed to live there. But the houses, you know, that were deemed unlivable, they removed, like, the electrical boxes and stuff. So
yeah.
It's given us, like, another challenge on, you know, trying to dry them out and stuff like that.
How much water did you guys have in the house?
It was about waist deep on my first floor.
Oy.
Yeah.
Were you
yeah,
there during the flood, or were you able to escape?
Me and my husband were there during the flood. Thankfully, my two youngest children were able to get picked up because it was like two floods, which was crazy. So, like, when the first round came in, we had water about a foot underneath our first floorboard in the basement. So, like, the whole basement was full of water. That
yeah, so you opened your basement door, and there was water.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. All the way, like, a foot away from the ceiling in the
wow,
basement, we were filled. And then, you know, the street drains, so we're like, oh, okay, like, let's start tackling, you know, trying to see the water like out of the basement, you know.
Well, that had to be unnerving, knowing that the electrical box and all the mechanicals are down there and underwater.
Yeah.
That water could be electrified.
Right.
Yep. So we were trying to make calls to Eversource to try to get the power shut off to the house. The fire department at that time did send out some people real quick to shut the power off because, like, my hot water heater and furnace were, like, being, like, ripped off pretty much, collapsing, kind of. So we were afraid that, you know, there was going to be a bad gas leak. So they sent down a crew real quick, and they shut off the gas to the three main houses that were getting water at that time. But yeah, then like a second flood happened, and
when did the second flood happen?
It was not long after the first, so the street cleared the water, and then the second rain like came in. But I thought we were good, you know, because it had drained. So I was like, okay, like, you know, so I wasn't really paying attention much to what was happening outside at that point, like I was, you know, in the beginning. And I just was like, you know, let me, like, check outside. And I opened my front door, and the water was at my porch and at that, like, above my porch. So at that moment, you know, I said to my husband, I was like, this water is going to start pouring into like our house, like any minute now. Like we gotta, I was just panicking at that point about a lot of animals.
Yeah.
You know, so at that point, like it felt like it was in the matter of like 10 minutes from when the rain ended to when water was all the way up to our house and pour, like actively pouring in the front door. Like, it took such a short amount of time for it to, like, reach inside the house.
So at that point, it's too late for you to get out?
Yeah, it was too late. And I have a lot of animals, you know, so my first instinct is I need all my animals up to the second floor.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we're searching. My cats were hiding. Like, you know, got to get my dogs up there. So, like, you know, that was taking time away from trying to be able to save, you know, our clothes or our valuables or anything like that. So
that had to be very tense.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how much time you have.
Right.
That noise is loud and furious. And, you know, it could take your life.
Yeah, so, like, I'm calling 911. I'm like, I don't know what to do. Should I jump out my window? Like, we're stuck. We can't open our doors. Like, our house is, like, underwater. You know, and 911, they were being bombarded. And, you know, bless all of them that were, like, taking those calls. But, you know, we were told, like, get to the highest level in your house. Stay there. Like, hang tight. We will get people out, you know, as soon as we possibly can.
Did any of the houses on your street wash away?
So the house to my west, their foundation collapsed in. So you could actually see into their basement from the road, which is crazy.
Wow.
Shout out to Eric across the street from us. He went and, you know, saved them. Elderly couple, and you know, they needed help real bad. So
it's another life-saving moment.
Yeah,
so many lives could have been lost in that short period of time. What are they saying about your house? Is it salvageable?
There's not a whole lot of information from like the town people on that. I think it's kind of a new situation for everybody.
All right, hold on one second. I'm going to see if I can get the mayor on and conference you in. Jimmy Koplik on the show, and the tribe's calling in questions. Lee wanted to know, what's the first show that you booked, and did you make any money?
First show I ever booked was Steppenwolf in 1968, November 1, at the Bette Memorial Coliseum in Columbus, Ohio. I was the new guy in town, and the local promoter said, I'm going to crush this guy. And he put the Doors in the night after me for two shows, and Peter, Paul, and Mary in to the same venue again for two shows. And he crushed me. I ended up, even though Steppenwolf had Magic Carpet Ride Out as the number one song at the time, there wasn't enough money around to go to my show, and I thought I was going to sell out, and I actually lost a little money as a college student, which wasn't easy. And I called up the guy who lived in Cleveland who did this to me, and I said, why do you want to go to come down to Columbus? Give me half the shows. I'll book them. I'll give you half of what I book, and I'll cover the shows. You don't have to come down from Cleveland. The guy loved the idea, and I got rid of the competition real
nice.
Fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Diplomacy. Smart. Diplomacy, yes.
Yeah, and I still know those people.
Nice. When, which show was it that you made so much money you thought, oh, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life?
Yeah, on something here.
It was a show of Rod Stewart with Black Sabbath opening up.
That's wild.
And I made $5,000, and I was a college student. I made $5,000.
What year was that?
1970. And
buy a house with that.
It's a good chunk, yeah.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And I ended up with $5,000 in my bank account. And I went, oh, this is what I've got to do. This is unbelievable. I ended up going to law school for a year in between this. Because my father did not believe that I should be doing this. And those were times that you actually listen to your parents.
Right.
And, but the Rod Stewart Black Sabbath show. And when I saw Rod last year in Bridgeport, I reminded him of that show. And he looks at me and goes, boy, my agent was pretty stupid putting me in with Black Sabbath. Ozzy could crush me back then. I go, yeah, musically, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And Rod remembered that tour, which was very, very. Very cool. It was 50 years ago.
Wow. I like how Rod said back then.
Back then, yes.
Yeah. Now,
right.
Now Rod could take him.
I could take him.
Yeah, that's true.
Is there a show that immediately comes to mind in terms of the most money you've ever made on a show?
Well, Watkins Glen.
Oh, wow.
Watkins Glen. Shelley and I did great on Watkins Glen. It was a concert. People call it a festival. I believe it was only one stage, three acts, one day. That's not a festival.
Right.
You know, Soundside's a festival. You know, 20 acts, 2 days.
Right.
It's a big difference. Really did great. I made a lot of money, and it was 1973. So it went a long way. I actually moved from my $200 a month apartment to a $500 a month apartment, which Ooh. Was big time for me. Yeah,
nice.
It was great.
That's, I think about that, seeing the band, the Allman Brothers and the Grateful Dead in 1973. It's just magical. Like those people, what a show.
All three were at their peak. All three were at their peak. No,
yes.
You're right.
Yeah.
Now, back then, no credit cards. So all that money you made, you had to transport that somehow. Well, how did you do, was it suitcases? Was it, how did you transport all
steamer
that money?
Trunk?
It was helicopters in suitcases.
Nice.
So you're right. There were no credit cards back then. Everybody paid for tickets in cash. And everybody, it was all, $10 to get in. So they were mostly $10 bills or $20 bills. Nobody that age had $100 bills. Unless it was snorting something, maybe they had $100 bills. But nobody was that rich that they were walking around with $100 bills. So when we had hundreds of thousands of people show up with $10 bills, we had helicopters bringing it back to Connecticut.
Wow.
Helicopters right. bringing suitcases of money back. That's a lot of trust you have in these people. Are you labeling each suitcase? Like, all right, this one has this one has 30 grand, this one has 50 grand.
We wrapped them, we wrapped the bills in $1,000 in $1,000 wrappers.
Wow.
We wrapped them so we didn't have to recount them again.
No, but in the suitcase, did you label them like this one's 50 grand, this one's 30 grand?
Yes, we wrote it on the outside of it. We actually put it on the outside. Now they think about how stupid is that, so everybody knew what was inside. But
right.
nonetheless, I wasn't too smart back in my 20s. But,
well, you're also suggesting to these people, like, I know how much is in this bag.
Right.
Don't try it.
Yeah, don't take anything.
And we also limited the number of suitcases we put on the copter in case the copter went down. Because then we'd lose all that money. So we wouldn't put more than $20,000 or $30,000 onto a copter. So the copter kept going back to Connecticut. And it landed in Oxford, actually. That's where we had the copter keep landing at the airport in Oxford.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
And so we had... Brinks truck there, picking up the money and putting it into a Brinks truck. And it must have taken 20 to 30 trips back and forth.
Wow.
Oh.
From Watkins Glen to Oxford.
I remember talking to Mitchell Ettis back 21 years ago when we just arrived here.
Uh-huh.
And he was the CEO of Mohegan Sun. And I said, what's the biggest challenge you have as the CEO of Mohegan Sun? And he said, moving money. And, you know, that was before you stick in a card in a machine.
Yeah.
And he just, their problem was just moving money around. It's a different time now. But that's a nice problem to have.
Mitchell once took me into what they called their money room.
Oh.
And it was as big as probably the Batcave that Batman had. And it was filled with filled with bills from the floor to the ceiling.
Did you pop a boner?
Did it smell nice?
Well, and what was great about it is they never caught up to counting it. They had counting machines, but they can never catch up to counting the money. They were always 3 or 4 days behind in counting money.
That smell should be a cologne.
That's got to be some room.
I smell like money.
A couple quick questions before we let Jimmy go. Wayne in Danbury.
Good morning, gentlemen. I trust everyone is doing well.
Yes, thank you for
asking. I've been a loyal listener since 74, and I'm still listening.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Copland. I had the privilege of attending a ZZ Top show at the Waterbury Palace in 1976.
Whoa.
Are you responsible for that?
Well, I did a lot of shows at the Waterbury Palace.
It depends. Did you have a good time?
Do I owe you money?
No, I'll tell you the truth. It was the best ZZ Top show I've ever seen.
Yeah, can you imagine seeing them right before they exploded?
Several times.
They had Fandango out then. They were incredible. What an amazing show.
I mean, there was no chrome on that show, man. It was just them on stage.
Wow.
And it was the best ZZ Top show I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was before stage sets and things like that. Nobody carried video screens or anything like that. It was just the artists getting on stage and singing their songs.
Just a couple Marshall stacks plugged right in.
Yeah, just raw,
exactly right. It was pure. Let's put it that way. It was very pure.
I just wanted to say thank you if you did. That's all.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, if you liked it, he did.
Just got home, too.
Thank you, Wayne. All right. Jimmy, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
All right. Talk to you next week. This guy moved to Oxford the day before the storms. How's it going, Dan?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Yeah, good timing on your part.
Yes.
Yeah. We bought a house a couple weeks ago, and this was our first weekend to move in after we got some repairs done, and what a weekend it was.
What repairs did you get done?
We had to get a new bathroom set up for us so we could get into the house with everybody.
Right.
Okay. And was your house damaged by the floodwater?
Thankfully, the only damage we got was some flooding in the basement, but nothing as bad as everybody else.
Yeah,
we got very, very lucky.
Okay, so it's not like you moved all your stuff over there, then lost all your stuff.
Yes, thankfully, no, we did not lose anything. We got very, very lucky.
And where are you coming from?
So I'm moving from Shelton, and my girlfriend was moving from Oxford. Ironically, we actually moved on Sunday morning from her apartment in Oxford, and our last load with the trucks was maybe minutes before it all started like crazy.
Wow. Can you imagine?
You are Mr. Timing.
Yeah,
that's good timing.
Yes, good timing.
I thought extremely lucky.
I thought this was a story of bad timing. It's actually a story of good timing.
Yeah, lucky timing.
It was very, very good timing. Yeah, we had heard the bridges collapsed maybe an hour after from one of my friends who was a first responder.
Wow.
Crazy, yeah.
Wow. What was in that last load?
I think a desk. We had four trucks, so it was a desk and a couple pieces of furniture and a lot of random things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all the randoms that didn't fit in the first couple of loads.
That last load's always wild.
Yeah, it's always the weird pieces that didn't fit.
Yeah, it's a cat litter box and a table.
Oh, here are all the butter knives.
Yeah, things that shouldn't be together. Right. Butter knives and cat litter box.
Hurry, the cat's got to go. All right.
It's so, I hate moving stuff in like the back of a pickup
because
you just feel so exposed.
Yeah,
you know?
So vulnerable.
Like there's your mattress. Like everyone, these random people, strangers are seeing your mattress.
Yep. That one pair of holy underwear just might just fly right out. Damn it.
When I was moving from one house to another on Long Island, Bobby the mailman grabbed a hold of my then wife's underwear drawer.
Oh.
Like, Jess, look what I got.
Oh,
I'm like,
put that down.
Bobby, give me that.
Yes. Just go.
Don't touch that.
Shoo.
Well, welcome to the community, Dan.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. We're happy to be here. Very happy to be here.
I got
to
tell you, you picked a great town.
You did.
Yeah.
I grew up in Seymour most of my life, so I knew a lot of people from Oxford, loved the town, loved the people.
Nice.
Great. Yeah, we're definitely happy to be here.
Great. It's a little weird getting around now, but
yeah.
Man, that's going to it's going to be better than ever.
We're very excited.
Awesome.
So. All right, well, I hope to see you at a local place.
Right.
I'm going to try to make it down there tonight's Quarry Walk.
Oh, great. Cool. Make sure you come up and say hello.
Please.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Buckner just moved to Oxford the day before the storm, took the last load from his girlfriend's apartment minutes before all hell broke loose.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Huh. There's a story right there.